Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun, day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Dr. Everything be alright. Instead of asking how much of your time is left, ask them how much of your mind, baby. Cause in this life, things are much harder than in the afterworld. This life, you're on your own. And if the elevator tries to break you down,
yo, this is the Fat King Mazal saying, you're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Ha!
WGXE underwriting support is provided in part by Crisafulli Brothers Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, Upstate New York's home services company since 1993. Red Carpet Service and Solutions. For more information, visit CRISBRO.com.
Wave Farms WGXE is made possible in part by the generous support of Jack Schoonover in Portland, Oregon. WGXE monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxe.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, June the 28th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. The U.S. Supreme Court Thursday announced it will allow for abortions in emergency situations in Idaho. For now, Arik Tegetoff has more.
The justices said they were dismissing an appeal by the state of Idaho, reestablishing a lower court decision allowing hospitals to perform abortions in emergency cases, despite the state's restrictive abortion laws. Molly Meegan is chief legal officer with the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. She says the organization is glad to see temporary relief in this case, but added that it is far from a complete solution.
The way these laws are set up in Idaho and elsewhere are that there are limits on what care can be provided. Those limits are not clearly defined, and they're not committed to the discretion, the judgment, the expertise, and the training of the physician that's facing a particular patient.
The protection for emergency abortions stems from a federal law known as the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. The law requires Medicare-funded hospitals to perform abortions in emergency situations. The three dissenting justices in Thursday's case called the act's ability to preempt Idaho's restrictive abortion laws plainly unsound.
And in last night's debate, President Joe Biden said putting the issue of abortion up to state discretion has been a terrible thing. That from CNN. Biden said, quote, the vast majority of constitutional scholars supported Roe versus Wade when it was decided. He said that in response to Donald Trump, who defended the overturning of the landmark case. Biden added, this idea they were all against it is just ridiculous. Former President Trump said he will not block abortion medication if he is elected. He also said he agreed with the recent Supreme Court ruling on the abortion pill. Next to Florida, where they're getting attention for efforts to create a comprehensive crisis response system for mental health needs.
A new report by the mental health advocacy group Inseparable calls for policies to expand 988 call center capacity, increase the availability of mobile response units, create more crisis stabilization centers, and establish stable funding mechanisms to sustain these services. Melanie Brown-Wufter with the Florida Behavioral Health Association says the Sunshine State is doing all that and more to provide care for anyone in crisis, including adding more clinics.
And now the Certified Community Behavioral Health health clinics. We are really building an entire system that allows an individual in crisis to seek care and be linked to the right level of care at the right time and to have those resources available that they need.
She says with Florida operating mobile response teams for over 30 years, it is well ahead of other states. She notes the increased state funding to expand services and to establish central receiving facilities, which are not yet available in every state. I'm Tramell Gomes.
This is Public News Service. The Delaware General Assembly has approved legislation to allow terminally ill adults access to prescription drugs so that if they are suffering, they can choose to die peacefully in their sleep.
Called the End of Life Options Act, the bill was approved this week by the state Senate following its passage in April by the House. But legislatures have wrestled with this issue for more than a decade. Wilmington resident Judy Gavados has battled cancer for much of that time. She's currently in remission, but when the time comes, she says she wants to die with dignity.
At 80, still have lymphoma, so it's not gone, and it's in my bone marrow, and it'll come back. I'm old, and I'll die, but I really don't want to do any kind of chemo again. It's just too much. I want quality of life.
Delaware Governor John Carney, a Democrat, has not said whether he plans to sign the bill, and his office did not respond to a request for comment. Several Republican lawmakers have expressed moral concerns about the bill, questioning the need for it with recent advances in hospice and palliative care. Mark Richardson reports.
And Alabama has the eighth highest youth incarceration rate in the nation. Juvenile justice advocates say more diversion programs could be key.
A report from the Sentencing Project outlines how programs that help kids avoid jail can reduce their chances of committing crimes. Richard Mendel, a senior researcher with the group, says when a young person is arrested, it has a lifelong negative impact. This often leads to higher dropout rates, lower likelihood of attending college, and reduced income by age 30.
More and more, the research is making clear that expanding and improving diversion and reducing or hopefully eliminating disparities in diversion really has to be a top priority for reform if we ever want to create a youth justice system that's fair and effective, that keeps communities safe, and that guides young people to success.
The report shows national disparities in who gets to be a part of these critical diversion programs. Shantia Hudson reporting.
Finally, our Mike Moen reports with the 4th of July approaching, families are likely to spend some time at municipal parks to celebrate. Parks Department staff in Minneapolis hope their labor dispute sheds light on the increasing demands in this line of work.
This week, Minneapolis Parks and Recreation Board workers held an informational picket as they seek better pay and safer working conditions. They've also authorized a potential strike in the coming days. Service area crew leader Mitchell Clendenin says they feel the requests are being ignored, while at the same time, his colleagues are asked to do more with not enough support.
In our heydays, we had upwards of 160 park keepers, and today we only have 114. But the amount of land and parks that keep getting built keeps going up.
This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service. Remember, and listener supported. Hear us on great radio stations, your favorite podcast platform, and you can find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello, and welcome to the better weather for Friday, June 28th. Local early morning temperatures range from 42 degrees in Steventown to 53 in Skodak. Air quality will be good, and that's right, just stay in bed under those blankets. A chilly morning out there turns into a comfortable day. Sunny skies, puffy clouds, a high of 78 at 5 p.m. Get out there and enjoy it. Seriously, tomorrow is not looking the same. But just remember, when you go out to have fun, bring the sunglasses and sunblock. UV warnings are out. 60 degrees overnight takes us into a wet and warm Saturday. Rain chances show up around 8 a.m. Those chances get real in the afternoon. Low-end wind gusts and thunder get added to the mix. Secure those tarps and garbage cans. We get a high of 80 that will linger most of the afternoon. Stormy conditions continue overnight and we get a humid feeling low of 72 degrees. Sunday, rain takes all day to come to an end and we see a high of 87. Monday, dry, mostly sunny with a high of 77. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 2:56 a.m., high tide at 8:42 a.m., Low tide again at 3:26 p.m. and high tide once again at 9:25 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 78 degrees. The tide strength will be average. And with conditions like that, I will see you guys out on that water this afternoon. Sunset today will be at 8:21 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:18 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be slow at 319 kilometers per second with an average density of 6 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently pretty bad till dark, then okay only below 8 megahertz overnight. There are low chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 146. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
You're listening to Wireless Reconnaissance, Broadcast Surveillance, Transmission Art, and more Saturdays on WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio.
Happy Independence Day, WGXC listeners. Hey. Woo! Make your voices heard.
Woo-hoo! Mm-hmm.
Thank you for blowing out everybody's speakers, Matthew.
Anytime, Shay Pine.
Yeah. Hi there, Sean Mack.
Hello.
This is the Campbell Hudson Radio Group. We're wishing you a happy 4th of July on Independence Day. In the USA. And we thought, hey.
Hey, Wendy!
Fourth of July, not always, but usually has big memories of times past. And I wanted to ask you all here. We've got Kelly, Sean Mack, and Matthew and myself, Michael, from Campbell Hudson. And we wanted to talk about memories from the 4th of July, past memories. So, what was yours? We were talking earlier, Sean. What's one of your big memories from 4th of July?
I would say like spending time with family, and when I was probably like 8 years old, I saw like the fireworks at the Clifton Park Commons like ground.
Albany, you mean, or?
Well, both, actually.
Wait, where's the common park?
It's in Clifton Park.
Oh, Clifton Park. I misunderstood. Okay. Clifton Park and then also Albany. You would go between the two?
Yeah.
Yeah? Was it just mostly the fireworks, or was the big highlight, or, I don't know, the building up to it, waiting for it to get dark?
Yeah, like that, too. And
yeah.
Like, sometimes just, like, spending time with, like, family and... Like eating food, like hot dogs, hamburgers.
Eating tons of cotton candy, right? Yeah. Yum, yum, yum.
Unhealthy.
Well, but that's the point, though. Pink or purple cotton candy? Did you ever have purple cotton candy, Kelly? Or bright blue. Have you had that?
Sean? Yeah, I had the blue.
Bright blue cotton candy. Yeah, it's pretty, I don't know, I can't remember the last time I had it. I'm sure it's one of the most unhealthy things ever created. But, my memory is they had these glow sticks. I'm sure there's different things now. This is in the 80s when I was back in the Midwest. But you would buy these green glow sticks, and you would snap it, and then it would turn green. But you would wait till it got dark, and you'd have, like, you know, it'd have a little string or rope around it so that it could dangle like a necklace, and then you just have this green thing hanging, and then the fireworks would come at whatever 9:07 in the evening. But that's my memory, is just running around with that green glow stick. But what about Matthew?
My memory about happy 4th of July holiday in Brooklyn, New York City, on a rooftop with Andrew, my oldest brother, his girlfriend Lindsay, mom and dad watching fireworks, watching over on people's heads. We can't see very well, but there's a four skies with four fireworks. There's one fireworks center of the sky, a second fireworks on the right side of the sky, another fireworks on the left side is a big rooftop fireworks marathon. Is so freaking good. It sounds like thunderstorms.
And they might have been singing this song?
No.
No. What song were they singing? This was one you requested. Was this the Twilight, the Glass Gleam?
Well,
that's a great story, though.
But I will send you a link, my all-time favorite Marshy band from Dad, that we will send to you.
Okay.
This is Childish Songs.
The one that you requested is Childish. Okay.
You put it bugger.
Yes, I got a bug bite from Golden Boy.
It's called Blockabur Band.
Thank you. And what about Kelly? 4th of July memories?
This is kind of a funny one. Years ago, we have this tradition where our family used to meet on the on the beach at Key Biscayne, where we used to have a townhouse there, and
where is this again? In Florida or
yeah?
Okay.
Miami. So what we did every year was we would gather on the beach and watch the fireworks, but
right.
I really cannot stand the fireworks, so when the first big clap of fireworks came on, I got up from the sand, ran across to the gate, flew the gate open, slammed it, and then ran across the driveway that we had there. It was like a small driveway with pools, and so I ran across the driveway and flew our sliding glass door open and then closed it, and I turned the our TV up to top volume so I wouldn't hear it.
And so, the bombs weren't bursting in air for you. No, they were bursting outside, away from the air. Yeah.
What'd you think about that one, Tom?
Even though we're on the air right now.
Oh, yeah. Shoot, sorry.
This is a song that, Kelly, you like a lot. That God Bless the USA. Lee Greenwood. Yeah, do you have memories of that song? Is that from childhood or...
Well,
no?
That's when I usually hear the Greenport, one of the bands at Dusk to Dawn does a version to that song. They did it last week.
Dusk to Dawn. Okay. Is that a local band? No, wait, Dusk to Dawn. I don't know. Would like to hear that. So very cool. We want to wish you all happy Independence Day on the 4th of July, and we hope you have a fun and safe holiday. WGXC 90.7 FM.
Thank you. America. Thank you, Thank you, WGXC listeners. Enjoy happy 4th of July memories. And to you, I am Matthew Wynn Harrington, Kelly Amaton, Sean McDonald, and Michael Patrick Hoy. Thank you, W90.7, WGXC Open Ears. Live by life. Thank you. Happy holiday.
For amber waves of grain.
Casino dance with the shirts open like Latin lovers on the shore, chasing all them silly New York virgins by the score. Love me tonight, for I
the streets or get busted for sleeping on the beach all night. Them boys in their high heels, ah, Sandy, their skins are so white. And me, I just got tired of hanging in them dusty arcades, banging them pleasure machines, chasing the factory girls underneath the boardwalk, where they all promised to unsnap her jeans. You know that tilt-a-whirl down on the South Beach drag, I got on it last night and my shirt got caught, and it kept me spinning. Didn't think I'd ever get off. That waitress I was seeing lost her desire for me. I spoke with her last night. She said she won't set herself on fire for me anymore. She worked that joint under the boardwalk. She was always the girl you saw bopping down the beach with the radio. The kids say last night she was dressed like a star in one of them cheap little seaside bars. And I saw her parked with lover boy out on the Kokomo. Did you hear the cops finally busted Madame Marie for telling fortunes better than they do? For me, this boardwalk life's through, babe. You ought to quit this scene too.
Oh,
Hi, this is Rodney Greenblatt from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC, ACRA, 90.7 FM.
La despensa de alimentos de Catskill está localizada en la parroquia de la Iglesia de St. Luke en Catskill, en la calle William, número 50. La despensa está abierta todos los viernes de la 1 hasta las 4 de la tarde. La comida sana es un derecho. Para más información, bienvenidos a todos a venir. Llamar por teléfono a 551-299-2456. Mirar la página web catskillfoodpantry.org o conectar con nosotros en Facebook en Catskill Food Pantry.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Michael Marshall, who is with the seminary at Colgate Rochester Crozer Divinity School and is a fellow with a Rural Migrant Ministry. And on Saturday, June 29th, people from New York and across the country are headed to D.C. for the Mass Poor People and Low-Wage Workers Assembly and Moral March at Washington, D.C. and to the polls being organized by the Poor People's Campaign. So Michael, thank you very much for joining us. And can you give us a brief introduction? Why is the Poor People's Campaign mobilizing this weekend?
Good afternoon, Mark, and thank you for having me on your program. The reason that we are all assembling in Washington across the country is that we go down there every 2 years to make it clear to our elected officials and to the nation that we have a set of principles, values, and aspirational goals in terms of making and creating a just and sustainable society. So we like to gather our folks together so that we can all be on one accord and have an understanding of what it is that we're going to be working on a state level, national level, and on a local level.
Now, this is an outgrowth of at least the work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his Poor People's Campaign. But poverty, of course, existed both before and after Dr. King's work. What are some of the key issues that you're hoping, you know, at the national level will be addressed?
Well, as you have stated, the poverty has continued since 1967 when Dr. King founded the Poor People's Campaign. And in some regards, the situation has gotten worse in terms of economic, medical, healthcare issues, and so forth. So it is important that we focus on the data, focus on the hard evidence about how many people are impacted by poverty, how poverty is the fourth leading cause of death in America, and that we actually can come up with prescriptive ways and policy procedures that can address the issues related to environmentalism, militarism, racism, things that impede or oppress people in our society.
Now, part of the call for this weekend to us about getting people to the polls, What role, if any, will the campaign actually play in terms of the upcoming elections?
Well, as a Poor People's Campaign, we do not actually do electoral politics as in endorsing or engaging with party politics. But what we do is look at policies and look at government structures that endorse or support the people of our society. So we are not getting behind a particular candidate or a particular party, but we are encouraging people to get out and be part of the electoral process. It is called waking the sleeping giant, because we know that as an electoral force, if you were to take the aggregate numbers of poor people, they would have a consequential impact upon the electoral politics that take place in local, national elections, particularly the upcoming presidential election in November.
Now, part of the campaign is targeting or trying to uplift low-wage workers. One of the issues I used to work on in New York was, you know, the whole effort to raise the state minimum wage, which, you know, largely has been raised to $15 an hour, you know, gradually. But the federal minimum wage, I think, is still stuck at $7.25 or so per hour nationally. What are some of the low-wage worker, you know, issues that the campaign is going to be addressing?
Well, particularly when we talk about raising the minimum wage, first of all, we have to look at the fact that what we use as a data or a baseline for poverty and a living standard in America, those numbers and those matrices that are used are very anarchic in that they're from the 1960s and the 70s. They don't reflect the current level of sustainable living in American society. So the measures that they use for poverty wouldn't even adequately reflect the needs of current realities. So even in the sense of coming up with a $15 or an $18 to $20 minimum wage, it's still a standard that is antiquated. We really need a living wage that is reflective of the current status of society, of where people are with what we measure poverty or the standard of living.
Now, what type of turnout are you looking at in terms of people coming from New York State down to D.C. for this weekend's event?
Well, in New York State, we have buses coming from all different parts of the state. Western New York, we have people coming from the Albany area. We have folks coming from the city. And we've been partnering with various organizations such as the 1199 SEIU Union. And so we are gathering on buses with them as well. So the numbers, I can't say specifically for New York State, but we are representing 38 states in the country. And all the states have, again, regional and local chapters of PPC. And we will be partnering with other organizations such as the SEIU Union that will be bringing, I think from New York alone, we have at least 5 buses that we're bringing, and then we will be partnering with SEIU and their membership as well.
Now, while you're working right now, I guess as a fellow with Rural Migrant Ministry, I believe you're more permanently based in Rochester. And Rochester, Buffalo, and I believe Syracuse are like 3 of the 10 cities in the country with the highest rate of childhood poverty. Schenectady in the capital district has a huge level of childhood poverty, but doesn't get into the national ratings because it's so small. What are some of the childhood poverty issues or solutions that the campaign would like to see addressed?
Well, one of the philosophies and principles that we adhere to is to change the story, you have to change the storyteller. As in, if you want to change the narrative, you have to change the narrator. So it's important that we not only look to advocate on or have folks advocate for themselves, but to actually be able to tell their stories and to represent the realities that they face, whether it's our youth, whether it's our elderly, whether it's the veterans. People need to be able to come forth and share their testimonies about the realities that they experience and how their lives are directly impacted by policies around healthcare, policies in education, policies about criminal justice. So it's very important that we will be bringing, for example, youths from the Hudson Valley who are part of the Rural Migrant Ministry programming. And these young adults are students that work in their communities, that work with the Rural Migrant Ministries to do advocacy work for themselves. The youth here have been working on a youth advisory council to work with Congressman Ryan to specifically address their needs around immigration, their needs about policies pertaining to minority populations. So again, it's really learning to speak for and be able to articulate what it is that they are experiencing and ways that they think that they could make policies that would make a difference in improving and sustaining their quality of life.
So we have almost about a little bit over a minute left. You know, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, Reverend Barber, one of the national heads of the Poor People's Campaign, really got a lot of national attention. And clearly the whole movement has continued to work, but it doesn't seem to get as much headlines as it do. Are you optimistic that we're ever really going to make progress on substantially eliminating poverty?
Absolutely. Because, again, the object is not to so much impact electoral politics on a candidate or a personality basis, but to actually bring people forth who can then empower themselves and their communities to really come up with policies and to address issues that speak specifically to their needs. So it's from a bottom-up approach as to a bottom-down approach in terms of what do we talk about when we decide to talk about militarism and how it impacts people's lives. But we want to look at the policies around monies that are spent and how we allocate those monies in our society.
We've been talking with Michael Marshall, Poor People's Campaign, Saturday, June 29th, and this has been Mark Dunlap for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Calling all radio enthusiasts. Have you ever wanted to be on the radio or learn how to edit audio? Got a great idea for a short segment to play during our drive time shows? Start making radio with us at WGXE 90.7 FM as part of the WGXE Community Contributors Program. No prior experience needed. For more information, contact content at wgxe.org. That is content at wgxe.org.
Here is Jaded Azarides, Columbia County poet Karen Schomer and Minutemen bassist Mike Watt, which is with the song Yes Here from their 2021 album Forthright.
A woman's nest is anger. A woman's love is anger. A woman's nest is anger. The street is lined with buildings I can't enter. Each house a petty crime or ill-advised plot. A way station between having and not having. A woman's lust is anger. A woman's touch is anger. A woman's lust is anger. After a while, the scenery repeats itself. Same buildings, but vaguely different. A sign stripped off to reveal an older one underneath. Furniture dumped on the sidewalk. A woman's home is anger. A woman's egg is anger. A woman's home is anger. I pass a warehouse, a woman's egg with dirty white anger. Siding in unbroken strips facing the street. Not a single door or window. Now an orange streetlight flickers. A woman's nest is anger. A woman's love is anger. A woman's nest is anger. Now a utility pole buzzes. Anger. Now it starts to snow.